And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you. With you for the next 60 minutes, we'll be discussing all the latest in terms of what's happening with the Giants as OTAs continue. And we want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Can't get to a phone, you can certainly follow and interact with us on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your calls, we'll get to your tweets in a bit, but we want to start off with obviously the big topic of discussion. And Paul, when you look at OTAs from Monday, by far the biggest storyline was the play of the secondary, and it really has been a theme, I would say, since the start of OTAs, particularly the play of Darian Thompson, the third round pick. He has been working with the first team, and he certainly has not disappointed thus far.
Not at all, and it's not just the fact that he's making plays, but he also seems to have a good head on his shoulders, and he's conducting himself as if he's been in this league for 3 or 4 years. It's very hard not to get a good first impression by what this third-round pick has done. And at the same time, his former Boise State teammate, Dante Dion, the diminutive corner, has made a number of plays since he originally got here as an undrafted rookie free agent, and once again yesterday came up with a pick six. I made the comment to you yesterday, Lance, when we were taping some of our stuff for the website. He's like a fly in the soup. He's pesky. He's really, really pesky. Now, I get the fact that he's not even close to being 6 feet tall, and that's going to make it really hard for him to win a matchup on the outside in the NFL. But there's no question in my mind that if there's someone an inch or two taller than him in the slot, he's going to give that guy a hard, hard go at it every single time. He's quick. He's very flypaper hands around the ball. There's a lot to like about this kid. And much like what we heard from Thompson, and we heard from Boise State's coach a couple of weeks ago when he was on our show, these Boise State guys have a real go-getter mentality because they believe they're underdogs, and they think they've got to do plus, 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 and then some to prove they belong.
Well, they certainly have a knack for getting the football. I think you could say that for both Dion and Darian Thompson. Thompson had 19 interceptions during the course of his collegiate career. And there's a lot of energy that you see out of Dion, too. You know, every time, yeah, no matter where he's lined up, he wants to be there. It's not just necessarily, oh, I'm going through the routine. You know, there's certainly pride that plays a role in that.
I keep using the term, like, he's like a pesky fly because he's that fly that invades your picnic. You know, and if you're the offense and you've set up that picnic, this guy's just all around, and he's just bugging the heck out of you.
See, you get the fly stopper out. Well, to get rid of him, essentially.
You got to catch him first.
Yeah, well, that's obviously goal number one. No doubt about that. You mentioned he had a pick six. Also important to note, Darian Thompson had an interception yesterday, too.
Yes.
It was off Odell Beckham's fingertips over the middle, and Thompson was in the right place at the right time. So he certainly has taken what we've seen in college. It's certainly translated over to the beginning of OTAs, and time will tell once they put the pads on. We have a little bit more physical contact. But when Ben McAdoo, who also spoke to the media, is talking about you and observing the fact that what happened during rookie minicamp, Paul, this is probably the one thing that jumped out to me about what McAdoo said. From the time he saw him at rookie minicamp to now, when he was interacting with the rookies first, now the veterans were thrown in the mix, Ben McAdoo has said that the vocal presence, the ability to line up the defense, he has not seen a drop-off, nothing's changed thus far.
You know, Lance, this entire scenario in the defensive backfield is so, so intriguing to me because I'm going to tell you flat out, I'm not sure anymore how many corners or how many safeties they're going to keep because there are some guys here who are opening some eyes. We mentioned a Dion. We mentioned Thompson. You know, Burhey's still getting some first-team reps, too. Let's not forget about that because, hey, Bennett Jackson is still here. Michael Thompson is still here. Trevin Wade is getting first snaps as the slot corner. Let's not ignore the fact that he's a holdover and had an up-and-down season last year, but right now he's getting first-team reps as the slot, okay? The Giants are going to have a really, really hard time, in my mind, trying to whittle down this secondary to the 9 or 10 guys that they're going to keep. Special teams is going to play a big part in that. There's no question. But I also think it's going to be the ability of a corner who can also play slot or a safety who can also play some corner. That versatility is going to be so critical when Coach McAdoo gets down to the final trims and he starts saying, okay, no, he's got to go or he's got to stay. Right now, I'm having a hard time figuring out who's going to fill out that depth chart.
It's a good problem to have, and I agree with you in terms of the more versatility you have, obviously the better chance you have not just to make the roster but to stand out and be utilized in different spots. That's why you got like Bennett Jackson, who started as a corner, moved to safety. You know at least he has experience at both positions, so that can certainly only help his cause. For those of you watching on Twitter, we want to bring you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you, Tuesday's edition of BBKL. We're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Clearly one of the biggest storylines, as we mentioned, to start OTAs this week, and even if you go back to last week, has been the play of the young members of this secondary, an opportunity for you to weigh in on that, as well as everything else with respect to the team. Q is in East Orange. He gets us going today. Q, what's happening?
How you fellas doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Q. How's things with you?
All right, Paul, I have a question. Not specifically for you, but I have several things I want to touch on. But first thing I want to say is that you guys kind of give my man Charlie the third degree. I mean, come on, let's give Charlie a break. I mean, some of the things that Charlie says as far as the offensive line, as far as what he projects what's going to happen if we don't, you know, bring in a certain quality of offensive lineman, I think he goes overboard. But a lot of the points that he make, I agree with. So I just want to start that. Charlie's my man.
Okay.
Shout out to my man, Charlie.
Q, you should know the Charlie fan club.
I know you're going to go.
No. All I was going to say, I'm not going to give you a hard time. Listen, Q, in all seriousness, I love giving Charlie a hard time, but it's all good natured. There's no negative activity. You know that. But all I'm saying is that you're not the first one to call up in support of him. So I just want you to know you are not on your own island, Q. It's nice to know that he does have some support. It's sprinkled across the country. There's not high volume areas, but Q, I tip my cap to you. I just want to note you do have some fellow supporters out there with you.
Okay, Dan, before you give, you know, Charlie the third degree, let me start my point and what I want to talk about. And, of course, I brought up Charlie, so I'm going to talk about the offensive line.
Sure.
Now, the reason why Eli Manning was one of the least sacked quarterbacks in NFL last year, to me, it wasn't because Jerry Newhouse,
Jerry and Newhouse were
outstanding on the right side. You know, I think it's because of McAdoo's offensive philosophy, in which it's designed to get the ball out like less than 2.7 seconds. So you know, I think that kind of helps the offensive line.
Sure.
Now, I think it's an offensive line friendly philosophy.
Sure.
And to continue on, you know. Like I said, that kind of helps out the offensive line. But don't you think because, you're basically asking your O-line to do is hold the block for 3 seconds and Ben McAdoo's philosophy. But what about when the pass protects or that quick read isn't there? Like, are you depending on Jerry and Newhouse to really give Eli Manning – like Tom, you know, a couple more seconds to improvise? That's when you've seen the flaws in the game. I think we really do still need an upgrade there. And I've been a long time Giants fan, and I'm not bashing Newhouse or Jerry. I'm just simply saying we need an upgrade there. Now to continue on to what I was saying, but my point is, don't get too caught up into the numbers, you know. When you watch the film, you see the flaws in Jerry and Newhouse's game. They're kind of okay. They're kind of stout when it comes, pass protection. You know, if you got to pass protect for about 3 seconds or whatever have you. But let's not forget the running game is lacking. And I'm not blaming it all on them. You know, I would see the offensive line as a unit. The running game is lacking. When was the last time we had a, you know, I mean, that's the main thing that I'm worried about. I know it's a pass happy league. I understand that. I understand that. But what about the running game? I remember Eli Manning with that play action and how lethal he was. That was when we was going on all cylinders. That's when we knew what we were going to get out of our offense. You know, of course, we had, you know, the good offensive lineman back then, too, that we had, you know, for like 5 or 6 years playing with each other. But another thing I want to talk about is on the same topic. I brought this up before when I called up, is I remember McAdoo vividly saying that Newhouse is a solid offensive lineman. I remember hearing him say he's a solid offensive lineman, he's a good player, a good veteran, whatever have you. But he's not a starting right tackle. But I keep hearing, I'm not going to say you guys, but people defending the fact, okay, well, we can get by with Newhouse, and I'm saying, okay, maybe we can get by, but how deep are we going to go to the play? Like, how far can we go with Newhouse? Now, my point is I'm just simply saying that, you know, we done got rid of Schwartz, we done got rid of Beattie, and McAdoo said, you know, become it before the draft and the free agency period, or we're going to keep Eli Manning upright. And the draft came and went. Free agency period came and went. No upgrades. So, cute. Like I said, but let me. Okay, I'm going to just finish it off, and I'm going to let you guys answer it offline.
Okay, sure.
Yep. But my point is that I am not bashing the offensive line. But you're not going to sit here and tell me that after McAdoo said all those things, and I'm quoting him because this is what he said out of his own mouth, and we do nothing in free agency, we do nothing, and as far as the draft to upgrade that position. So I know we still have some time to go before training camp come and before, you know, September 11th. I understand that, but if you made one of your priorities as a head coach to keep Eli Manning upright, and you're going to tell me, okay, you're going to bring up the stats from last year and say, okay, yeah, well, Eli Manning was one of the least sacked quarterbacks. That is true. But that's not because Jerry and Newhouse were solid on that right side. When that quick read wasn't there and Eli had to hold the ball, 9 times out of 10, I don't really remember Newhouse holding the block and giving him time to improvise. Now, I ain't saying, it's just – couple plays he probably did, or a couple games he had it, but then there were games that I remember he lost individually. Like I said, I'm not going to bash. I'm not bashing the offensive line.
We're not taking it that way, Q.
Or Jerry.
Q. Okay, go ahead, I was going to say, we're not taking it that you're bashing the offensive line. You brought up a number of points, and we certainly do appreciate the phone call. Paul and I just want to expand upon a number of the things that you brought up, and then obviously we'll continue the interaction on the phones and so forth. But, Q, we certainly appreciate some of the points you brought up. He hit on a lot, Paul. I don't know where you want to start.
Well, that's why I wrote a couple of items down here, and I'm going to try to make this real quick because I do want Lance to chime in, too. I'm just going to say this. You bring up a lot of very good points. You're on the right track in a lot of ways about what you said. There's no question that the Giants' run blocking as an offensive line, specifically on that right side, has a lot to be desired. It needs to get better. Jerry and Newhouse are not great run blockers. They never have been. They probably never will be. Jerry, an adequate pass protector. I don't think there's any question about that. I've said it a billion times and I'll say it again. He deserves credit for holding up in the passing game. Newhouse, he was signed to be a backup. He was signed to be the third offensive tackle on this team. He was not signed to be a starting player and had to start out of necessity. You have to keep that in mind when you look at this player. No matter what you think of him, you must keep in mind what the purpose was and why he was brought here. Now, here's what I will tell you. I still do believe the Giants have a plan to upgrade themselves at that spot. Short of that plan coming to fruition, if they're forced to continue with the players that they have, the reasons that they believe it will turn out better are A, continuity, which we've heard from all the offensive linemen in the last week, that having the same 5 guys together again for another season should improve their level of play somewhat. Again, how much? I don't know. But they do believe there'll be a raising in the level. The other thing I want to mention to you is the Giants have not had a very strong blocking tight end here for several seasons. That is a direct correlation to how well the offensive line blocks. Okay? If you had a Zig Mowat, if you had a Howard Cross, if you had a Mark Bavaro lining up, okay, next to your right tackle, Marshall Newhouse, and they were there to help pick up the pass rush, if they were there to help plow forward for a first down, if they were there to help seal the edge, the deficiencies, or should I say, to be kinder, the lack of high-level blocking that you would have in the running game from that side of the line would be de-emphasized because you had a ferocious tight end who was able to help off the edge. These are all the things you must take into account. This is why I tell people all the time, please don't be like the newspaper guys that just says one thing with a wide paintbrush and says, that's the problem or that's the guy. That's not the way this game works, okay? You have to peel back the layers of the onion because there are many factors as to why something is as it is. It's complicated. There's a domino effect no matter how you cut it.
I agree with a lot of things that you brought up, Paul. What I wanted to add was two things. For clarification purposes, and I know Q was going back to the archives, McAdoo, to my knowledge, Paul, he never said that Marshall Newhouse wasn't a starting offensive lineman.
I don't remember
those
that
words.
Being said,
I don't remember him saying that, but I feel pretty comfortable not speaking out of line by saying that,
I do think it's fair to say when he was signed, the Giants did say he was brought here to be a third tackle.
Well, that's
the swing tackle.
But I don't think he ever said on the record that he wasn't a starting caliber offensive lineman.
No, I don't think those words were ever said quite like that.
Well, and I'm not putting words in Q's mouth.
He's interpreting. He's
correct. But I felt that was being insinuated. That's why I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
Certainly, when they had Flowers and Beattie, the goal was those two were going to be your edge tackles,
right.
And then Newhouse was going to be the swing guy. And they've brought in guys like Sean Locklear in the past, and he was that swing type of tackle,
and turned out to be a starter.
Correct, exactly. So that's what the plan was for Newhouse. That's been a track record before in years past. So I think that was laid out verbally by the coaching staff. But, you know, for them to have ever got up to the podium and said that, you know, we don't think Newhouse is a starting caliber type
of
guy.
No, I don't think those words
ever came
out.
That far. I just wanted to at least clarify that. Number two, I don't have the numbers in front of me, Paul, and maybe you recall this from breaking things down. Once again, I don't have my charts all with me, but the Giants struggled running the ball overall last season. And I know I'm giving you a broad, generic statement, but what I'm getting towards is, and this is not to build an excuse for the right side of the offensive line, but let's not forget, they were running to the left side, Paul, and they were not necessarily yielding positive results every time they ran to the left. So the point is that to just say that every time they ran to the right, there was a lack of success, to me, is misleading when you look at the results from last season. There were times where they were running to the left, and they were not necessarily getting the positive chunks that they desired as well.
Well, the offensive line in general has not been a great run-blocking O-line. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
You know, but here's what I will give you. You want? I'll show you some numbers here that I can draw up for you, or I can bring up for you. The NFL's official stats program has something in here. Play propensity direction report.
They do? Okay, if they have that, I'd be curious to just refresh my memory with that.
This is what I want. New York Giants regular season last year. Okay. When the Giants ran to the left side, okay,
So this is the statistics here, right?
Okay, running to left end, which is all the way wide to the sideline, only 2.7 yards a carry on 23 carries, which is not a lot of a sample, but it's not great.
But still, okay, then
behind
this is
left,
the left
tackle, behind Flowers, 4.3 yards a carry.
Okay.
That's fine.
Yep.
No problem there. Right behind Pugh, 4.6 yards a carry.
Okay.
No problem with that. Right behind Richburg, 4.8 yards a carry. That's fine, too. And now when you get to the right side, directly behind Jerry, 3.5. It starts going down.
But it looks like that wasn't bad
now,
in terms
right,
of right tackle.
Well, right behind Newhouse, 38 carries for 4.26. Now, you say the average number is fine, but now here's the thing that you got to look at. Look at the number of plays. compared to the number of runs in this area. This is way down.
They did not. The sample size
is much smaller, so the average, of course, is skewed, and that also tells you they didn't feel very confident about running right there because they only ran it 38 times.
Compared to what we
saw. Right behind Richburg, 112.
Or even if you go here, you got 58 and 74.
Right behind Flowers.
Towards the left side.
So those numbers, they do tell you a story.
And then what was it all the way to the right end?
All the way to the right end.
Which is even less of a sample size.
Well, only 15 plays, 5-2. 5.2.
But once again, a very small sample size.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's got to tell you something right there. The fact that in terms of the five linemen, only 38 times behind right tackle, which is by far the fewest.
Well, it's fewest, and I agree with you there, Paul.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, but if you take into consideration the 38 rushing plays off the right tackle and the 15, if you combine that together, you know, you're talking about just over 50-some-odd plays. The average, though, is not terrible number-wise. It's still a small sample size, and I understand you could read into it.
It's skewed.
It is skewed, but what I'm saying is that, yeah, it's hard to say if we doubled those totals, would the average stick to the same? I don't want to necessarily make those assumptions. Hard to tell. But all I'm saying is, even with the small sample size, I think statistically, if you look at the numbers, they're not necessarily equivalent to the narrative that's out there that every time it went to the right, the results were not necessarily positive.
No,
what I'm getting at.
I think, though, that this chart clearly says to you, if you're the Giants and you want to run the ball effectively, you're going behind Pugh and Richburg.
Well, of course, and even based on the volume of runs that went that way.
They knew what they were doing.
I think that says it all. No doubt about that. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We got Jason in New Jersey. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, yeah, I just like to point out that I mean, McAdoo's offense is a passing offense. I mean, you guys focus too much on the run game because you really don't need a great running game in this offensive scheme for the offense to be successful.
Okay, all right. Look, hold on a second. Before you go any further, did you watch how many games they lost in the last couple of minutes last year? And that was a direct correlation to not having a four-minute offense, which requires running the ball to eat the clock.
Okay, not true. McAdoo was asked about this on The Fan, about how to close out games. He said that there are different ways to skin a cat, and he said that we're going to do it with receivers, tight end. It doesn't have to go. You don't have to go big and run the ball. That was Coughlin's method. Coughlin wanted to pound the ball.
I get what you're saying, but last year their inability to run the ball in a four-minute offense cost them numerous times. We could talk all we want about what we think Coach McAdoo is going to do in the fall, but we don't know that yet. We got to see.
Okay.
And he, of course,
some of what he's thinking is because of what he doesn't have. Hold on a second. If you have a two-possession lead, you're not worrying about four-minute offense. So if you score more points and prevent the other team from scoring before the end of the fourth quarter, and you have a two-possession lead, you're not worrying about a four-minute offense because the game's over.
No, but you
can't score two possessions in one possession.
Well, but Jason, you still want to officially be able to run out the clock, and the way you run out the clock is by running the football. So even if you're playing with a lead, you still need to be able to run the ball.
But McAdoo was asked about that. He said specifically there's different ways to skin a cat. He said you don't have to go big. There are different ways. You can use receivers. You can do quick passes to Shepherd, quick passes to, you know,
I understand.
Skin a cap.
Yeah, but here, to be fair to Coach, okay, and I understand, he's looking at an offense that he's seen the last 2 years that could not effectively run the ball and milk the clock. He can't assume that that's going to be fixed, especially with the current offensive line that's here. So if I'm him, I'm already trying to scheme around that, and that's probably what he answered.
But I don't think McAdoo's going to play the style of football that Coughlin did. McAdoo's looking to score points. His philosophy is score, score, score.
Well, aren't the Giants the sixth highest scoring team in the league last year?
I understand. Yes, but with an improved defense, if you have a bigger, wider margin at the end of games, if you're up by 17 points in the fourth quarter, are you so worried about running out the clock? No. If you score more points by adding more weapons, it's a passing offense, okay? McAdoo is Matthew even said in his presser, he said, we're going to throw for more touchdowns. That's key. He didn't say we're going to score more touchdowns this year. We're going to throw more touchdowns.
Well, keep in mind, but Jason, Eli Manning's coming off a career year. They threw plenty last season. I think, Jason, just let me finish. I'll let you continue. I think you're almost making it sound like what happened under Tom Coughlin last year is completely gone and Ben McAdoo's coming in and everything's going to change. And there are changes, don't get me wrong, but let's not forget, McAdoo was the offensive coordinator last season. He didn't just throw his offense out the window.
2 seasons.
Yes, for two seasons. Listen, but
I know Matthew was the offensive coordinator, but Coughlin was responsible for the game plan. So what happened was this. The Giants would use McAdoo's offense to take the lead, right? And then once they had, let's say, a 10-point lead in the third quarter, Coughlin decided to slow the tempo down and go back to what he always did and then start doing this ball control, you know, pounding the ball between the tackles when you don't have mauling guards. It's not adjusting. What Coughlin did, he didn't adjust to his personnel. What McAdoo is going to do is he knows what he has on his team, and he's going to do his style of winning. He comes from the purest of West Coast offenses. It's a different formula, a different style of football.
Well, I'll say this. There'll be 80,000 people every Sunday who would love to go by what you're saying so that the Giants win by double digits. That would be great.
I think they take that in heart.
That'd be great.
Here's what I'm saying, though. Listen, though. When the Packers won the Super Bowl in 2010, did they have a great running game? No.
Jason, that's not entirely true.
When the Packers went 15-1 in 2011, did they have a great running game?
Jason, that's actually, if you go back and look, the year the Packers won the Super Bowl, their running game clicked in the postseason.
Correct.
James Starks, go look up James Starks' numbers. Look up that Eagles game in round one.
Yep.
He was a big component to that offense. So that's misleading to say that they had no running game. It came together in the postseason. It did, and it was a huge difference maker.
Quite frankly,
but
if you go back to 2011,
they went 15-1. 15-1. Aaron Rodgers was the MVP. They had very little running game. All they did was throw the ball over the place. They won 15-1.
Go back to the 2000.
Well, but then they didn't win the Super Bowl that year, too, though, Jason.
Go back.
Keep that in mind.
Because the NFL playoffs is like March Madness. All it takes is one off day. Receivers drop balls, and you lose one game. You have one bad day, and you lose. That's fine. But I'm saying over the course of the 16-game season, they won 16 games. They must have been doing something right.
Jason, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not totally dismissing what you're saying, but I also believe that you're pushing this a little bit too far, because what you have to understand, even in 2011, when the Giants did not have much of a running game during the course of the season, they found one in the very last month or so, and they effectively were able to get first downs and move the chains much more frequently with their running game than they had been throughout the course of the year. And that was critical to them being able to win that Super Bowl. You need to be able to do it. I get what you're saying. You don't want to lean on it all the time, but you have to have it.
Critical. No. No one's saying the running back isn't – no one's saying the running game is completely irrelevant. What we're saying is the foundation – you got to understand the foundation of McAdoo's offense is interior pass protection. Let's break it down. Justin Pugh, excellent pass-blocking left guard. Weston Richburg, excellent pass-blocking center. John Jerry, excellent pass-blocking right guard. Why? Because in his scheme, it's a pass-heavy offense. When you're passing the ball 40-something times a game – the quickest distance to the quarterback is up the middle. So the quickest way for a D-line to affect the quarterback is by pushing the pocket. You get a little push up in the middle. The quarterback gets squeezed. He can't make those, short, accurate passes. And in this offense, a lot of in-breaking routes, slants,
There's only one thing you said, though.
Have to cross the middle of the field. The quarterback has to be able to see the receiver over the middle of the field, requires the guards in the center to keep the interior.
Well, Jason, you're getting extremely technical.
You always want a clean windshield in front of your quarterback, and you want him to be able to get rid of the ball quickly enough so that if there is pressure, it's not going to affect it. I understand all of that, but here's what you also have to figure on. You mentioned just a minute ago, if McAdoo's throwing the ball 40 times a game, they don't want Eli throwing the ball 40 times a game. Trust me, if he's throwing it 40 times a game, the Giants are in trouble. They don't want 40 throws a game.
Jason, the stats show, and listen, appreciate the phone call, the stats show that when Eli Manning's completion attempts go up, the Giants' record does not necessarily stay even to that in terms of going up. So all you need to do is look at the archives. That's not what they want to do. Actually, if memory serves me correct, Paul, I think it was the rare occurrence last season in the Niners game where Eli had about 50 pass attempts. They actually won the game. Normally, it dictates the complete opposite for the Giants when Manning's in that 45 to 50 pass attempt.
There was a number, and I'm forgetting it now, so forgive me, but there was a number where the winning percentage of teams when quarterbacks are throwing it like more than 45 times a game, it's like 35%. I mean, it's not a good idea. And I appreciate the caller saying that McAdoo's a West Coast guy. He likes to throw it. He likes to get creative. He likes to scheme it. There's no doubt about any of that. No one's disagreeing with that. But what we are telling you is you still have to have an effective running game as part of your repertoire. And the truth of the matter is this is not, okay, this is not the Warren Moon, Dan Fouts, you know, let's just drop back and wing it 50 times. I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to make a pretty good bet, and I'm not a gambler. I'm going to make a pretty good bet. If we went down the hall right now and asked Coach McAdoo, if you had your druthers, would Eli throw the ball 45 times a game, or even 40? I'm going to say he probably would say I'd rather not.
Yes. And one of the things that they've all been talking about all offseason is they have to increase and improve the running game. I mean, that's been well documented. I think Jason brought up a number of good points about how the running backs, you could dump it off to them. And we saw that with Shane Vereen. And that's going to be still a component, Paul, of this offense.
Sure.
But, you know, all you need to do is go back to third down efficiency last season. And it doesn't matter whether or not you have other ways to skin a cat, using Jason's terminology. You still need to improve the running game to make sure that you don't have a similar third down efficiency rate as they did last season. And I have those numbers right in front of me. They were 22nd in the NFL. 38% of the time they converted on third down. And if I broke it down for you, and I have every single game about how many, Paul, they were facing on third down for 8 yards or 9 yards or more, every game, if you go down the list, they were facing at least anywhere from 7 to 9 downs every game where they had to get at least 8 or 9 yards to get the first down. That means that you're not getting the running game going on first and second down, which is an absolute must for any team, regardless of what offense they're running. There has to be a component of the running game in this offense, even if you studied West Coast principles going back to the year of whoever. You still need to be able to run the football because you have to be able to get in manageable third downs. And every time you throw, it doesn't necessarily increase those chances.
It's a shame. It's a shame that, you know, we can't go back because it's so easy to say, well, okay, throw. West Coast offense, they throw. It's easy to say that. But if we had the ability to go back and actually show you how important it is to be able to move the sticks, to be able to run it when you've got that 10-point lead with 5 minutes to go, and now you can truly milk that clock the way you want to. I wish we could bring that up for you and actually show it to you on the screen so that, you know, a guy like Jason could have a better understanding. But I appreciate where he's coming from. He's just overzealous in the passing game and a little bit in the wrong direction, but it's okay. It's okay.
And that's what we're here. We're here to have the dialogue, but I think based on the numbers and based on the track record of NFL teams, and a number of you have been weighing in on Twitter, and actually, you know what, since it's related, let me throw out some tweets here. Now, Albert at AVD30, you need to run to win, and then he lists off a couple of teams that made the playoffs last year, Seattle, Carolina, Denver, and Pittsburgh, and four of those teams, the one thing they had in common.
Yes,
Pittsburgh struggled a little when Le'Veon Bell went down, and Seattle with Lynch, but even some of the backups were productive, and we know Carolina and Denver had two very good running games for the most part.
Let me just tell you, okay, Aaron Rodgers comes from that Green Bay attack, and everybody likes to believe, okay, that's a West Coast offense. That's one where you love to throw it, right? Okay, I just did a little check here. In Aaron Rodgers' most prolific season in terms of throwing, it was 572 throws last year. 572 divided by 16 comes out to 35.75, so 36 attempts a game, okay? Now, for the rest of his career, the average actually comes down a little bit under that. That's not 40 a game. So you know, for Jason to sit here, get on the phone and tell us Coach McAdoo is going to want to throw the ball 40 times a game with Eli. It's going to be a passing offense. It's going to be all about passing and scheming. And you don't have to run the ball. He's overboard.
Well, and go back to the Packers' track record again. I'm telling you, the years that they've had their most success, Paul, is when the running game got going.
Well, sure.
It goes hand in hand, even with a prolific quarterback like Aaron Rodgers.
You heard him?
Yeah, I believe so.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, last time I checked. You need to be able to run the football. And the year they won the Super Bowl, as we were going back and forth with Jason, the running game came alive in the playoffs. And, I mean, think about it when they've had disruptions in the health of their running backs. You know, Aaron Rodgers has had to throw 45 to 50 times. And, you know, credit to him, he's got a very good touchdown-to-interception ratio during the course of his career. But in the years where they haven't been able to run the football, they have not made deep postseason runs. That's
correct.
Because they're not necessarily as well balanced.
Correct. And that's all you'll ever hear about from the people who criticize those Green Bay teams is that they haven't been balanced enough and they haven't been able to run the ball enough.
Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. We're going to get to more of your tweets. Appreciate everybody chiming in there. In the meantime, let's head back to the lines, 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for spending part of your Tuesday with us. Ahmed is in Pennsylvania. Ahmed, what's happening?
Hey, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thanks for making it.
I have all the faith in the world in the Giants putting a good offensive line on the field come game time in September. I'm just really intrigued and looking forward to seeing Paul Perkins finally getting on the field in OTAs next week. And from what I've read, he's the most elusive running back coming out of college football this year. So if say our line is not up to where it should be, which I doubt that we're going to have any problems with our offensive line at this point. I think that, according to what I read, is that he doesn't need much space, much of a hole.
No, he doesn't. You're right.
And he's gone.
He's
so
quick.
I think that the Giants' offense will be that much more dangerous with a guy like that on the field and with our three wide receivers. That we're hoping that Cruz and OBJ and Shepard will all be on there. And hopefully his transition from college to the pros will work out and he will learn proper blocking techniques so he can protect Eli Manning so he can get on the field.
I'll give you a little bit about Perkins. Hold on. I want to give you some information on him because his class didn't graduate at UCLA, he's not allowed to be here right now. You understand
right.
That, right? Okay.
Yes, sir.
So there's no question he's behind. Now, the good news is they are allowed to send him materials. That you are allowed to do. For the rookie who's still left behind because he's got to be at college, you can send him materials, plays, videos, playbooks, et cetera, et cetera. You can still do that. And so he is trying very hard to catch up as best as possible, even though he's not physically here yet. But he's going to be behind the eight ball. There is no doubt about it. And there is a lot of competition at running back, Lance, for those snaps. Now, the veteran minicamp is coming up, the mandatory, on the 14th.
And he'll be there for that.
And then after that, 6 weeks off. He is really going to have to crack the books during those 6 weeks, again, from whatever he's able to glean when he's here, and then until he gets to camp. Now, here's what I will say about him. You're 1,000% right. Incredibly elusive, incredibly quick, can make something out of nothing. It's about his jump cut. The jump cut that you know Shady McCoy has, which is what makes him so incredibly dangerous and why the Giants had so many problems with him over the years, is because of that jump cut. It is a very unique talent. Not everybody has it, but when you do, boy, does it cause defenses headaches. So I'm with you. I think that this is a kid who's got a tremendous amount of potential, and he could be a very exciting player. I think if you wanted to fit him into a role, right now he would kind of be Shane Vereen's understudy, if you would ask me, because he's more that kind of player than he is any of the other Giants running backs. And he's got receiving skills. So, you know, the question, of course, will become, how is he at picking up the blitz?
Pass protection.
Because if he can't protect the passer at this level, then it's going to be real hard for him to get on the field. But I appreciate your intrigue on him. I'm excited to see him when he gets here, and that's a good phone call. Thank you.
Ahmed, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. I think this story is really going to be told for him come training camp when, you know, he's going to be out there day to day. Like you said, he's going to have an opportunity to get more into the playbook and so forth. And it reminds me of, I'm not comparing the players, but the Giants have been through this before. Adrian Robinson, Paul, if you recall, at Cincy, classes ended much later than the typical offseason schedule. He didn't join the team until training camp.
You will never be able to make all that time
no,
up.
No, not at
it
all.
It can't be done. Not in this game. It's too complicated. But you can do whatever you can to lessen the blow by just working your butt off and studying really, really hard. And then when you get out here, maximize your reps for sure.
Well, and this was discussed briefly yesterday, Paul. And the point that I was raising is, you know, studying the playbook, knowing the terminology is great. But at least in my personal life, and I think other people can relate to it, it's one thing to read it 100 times. It's a whole other story. Yeah. Get out on the field and you start to implement it. That's when you really start to get the hang of it. Mm-hmm. The studying in the book is only going to get you so far. You need to get out on the field.
No question. I will add one other thing, though. My understanding from people who scouted Perkins, because you can't always tell just by looking at the tape, but people who scouted him and talked to him, they tell me he's a very quick pickup. And
which is good.
Yeah, and he understood UCLA's offense very, very well. A real football guy. And they think as much as you can try to make it up, he'll do a pretty good job in doing so.
Well, here's what's going to help his cause. He's coming from a team that ran an NFL-style system because
no question.
Jim Mora Jr. is their head coach.
No question.
And he's been an NFL head coach. Plus, his father's been an NFL head coach. So that, at least, is going to help him with respect to that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got T in Maryland. T, what's happening? T,
hello?
You there? T's usually on the money, on point. T. Lost for words today. I'm a little disappointed and shocked. All right, T. Well, if you have an opportunity to give us a ring back, feel free to chime in. A lot of activity on Twitter, Paul, so let's answer some questions. Let's read some comments. In the meantime, 201-939-4513 is the telephone number as I bring up the laundry list of tweets. Number of people also throwing out some good numbers to back up the claim about how the running game is extremely important. Here's one from Will at Spain_man_1991. Since 2007, with a top 10 running game, Giants have a 10-6 or better record. Happened three times, if not 9-7 or less record. So another statistical analysis to say when you run the football, chances of your record improving go hand in hand. Vice versa, the opposite way.
Well, I mean, just common sense tells
you. Of course, that's common sense. But when you have the numbers to back it up, at least,
it's
it
nice,
helps support that.
But remember, okay, and this is just the old football 101 kind of phraseology. When you pass, a bunch of bad things can happen, you know, specifically turnovers and penalties. And if you know enough about this game, you know that turnovers and penalties are two of the big bugaboos that drive coaches crazy and cause teams to lose more games than win.
Big Daddy Mang at Fat Daddy 43. That's the PHAT version. We should clarify there. We fall for the QB-driven league stuff when, in fact, there's only a handful full of great quarterbacks. You got to run the football. And even if you have a great quarterback on your team, you still need to run the football, as we pointed out with Aaron Rodgers. And the same thing with Eli Manning. No different there. Another one from Albert at AVD30. Jaguars, great passing game. Last season with Blake Bortles taking the next step, Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson, good receiving core.
Sure.
Hurns just got an extension. Not very good running game. Guess what? No playoffs. You need a running game. You need the running game! Exclamation point. So there's another example, and they came a long way, Jacksonville, last season in terms of their
offense.
They're
getting better, too.
Absolutely. Vic at NFL NYG 43 asked the Patriots about passing the ball in the last 4 minutes, specifically last season.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. They win. They are the poster child for success. Well, okay, so he's actually, excuse me, I misinterpreted this. He's going,
unique
he's arguing.
Situation, though.
But, no, but here's the other thing, though. You know, they had major injuries on their offensive line last season, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not overlook that.
And they weren't going to be able to run the ball.
So there you go. That was, I think, an indication
necessity
of why they went pass happy. And pass heavy. So, I mean, you can't overlook that, Vic. I mean, I understand the point that they are unique, but still, you know, they were also in a situation where they didn't have a choice last year.
They really didn't.
They were going to their 7th and 8th offensive linemen.
They made it work, and you know what? Sometimes desperation is the mother of invention, and that happens sometimes. You just, you know, the odds tell you this is not a good idea, but sometimes you just have to go there.
We'll get to more of your tweets. Keep them coming. #GiantsChat. T, we return back onto the phone lines. T is now extremely talkative from what I'm told. T, how we doing?
Hello.
Hey, Paulie, how are you, Lance? Once again.
Doing well, T.
Hey, I love you guys, but hey, I got to tell everybody. In the words of Paul DeTino, we don't know anything. We have to wait till this plays out. We're making assumptions. We're jumping the gun. Why don't we wait? Like I told everybody last week, relax. Everyone's getting all antsy and, you know, the sky is falling for nothing. Like, continuity. That's a big part of playing O-line. And what these guys need to realize is, okay, Gary and Marshall Newhouse, they may not be the best or they didn't play well last year. But let's remember, Will Beattie was supposed to be the starting left tackle. Eric Flowers was supposed to be the starting right tackle. Jeff Schwartz was supposed to be the right guard. And Pugh was the left guard. And Richburg was the center. Okay, because of an injury or three, things got shuffled around. So now you throw in Marshall Newhouse, who, I'm not going to lie, he was very serviceable. Did he make some mistakes? Yes, but everybody made mistakes up and down the line. No one is exempt from mistakes. It's going to happen. And you have to think, it was his first time being a full-fledged starter. He came in for spot games before, but he was a full-fledged starter for the first time. It was a lot being thrown at him at one time when he wasn't even thinking about being the starter. He had his mindset on being the swing tackle. So let's fast forward to now. We have a new offensive line coach. And if anybody knows anything about football, you've seen what this guy can do from the lines that the 49ers had. And let's be honest, it wasn't like they were household names, but they were a dominant, cohesive group. Not individuals, but group. Now, these guys had an offseason together. They know their prospective roles. And guess what? Going to be a little better.
T, I'm with you on what you're saying, but I have to interrupt for half a second because I don't want to let that comment go by without saying that Coach Flaherty was an excellent offensive line coach as well. Please,
love Flaherty.
Please.
I love them.
I love Coach Solari's resume, and I think he's going to do a really good job here from everything I can tell. It's all thumbs up. But I don't want to let that comment go by without saying that Coach Flaherty did a marvelous job here for a lot of years. And, in fact, may I add, helped him win a Super Bowl, too.
Correct, and it helped bring about a line that was really the staple of the team. I think the better way to phrase it, and T, we'll let you continue here, is that you're going to get a new voice and a different lens. That's what you're getting.
That's all it
is. That doesn't mean that you're getting all of a sudden a 10 times better coach.
That's all.
Yeah, there you go. You know what? That's the better way to articulate that, Lance. And another thing I want everyone to realize, and I love Charlie. I just like giving him a hard time. And he's right on certain points. But, hey, like I said, and Paul and Lance, you guys addressed it earlier. Hey, another year, these guys have continuity working together. I'm telling you, it's going to be a vast – because think about it. When Seibert and those guys were there, nobody knew what we were going to get. 2 years down the road later on, hey, man, we had the best offensive line in the NFL. So just give these guys a chance. I have a lot of faith. It's going to sound weird, but I have a lot of faith in Newhouse and Jerry on this right side of the line.
T, let me balance this. Let me balance this for a second, and I'm going to do it by asking you a question. I'm kind of in the middle on this, okay? I don't think the line is something that you want to throw a pizza party about, but I also don't think it's so horrible that you can't play. I mean, they were the sixth highest scoring offense in the league, all right? But there are deficiencies and there are warts and there are things they have to overcome to be that effective because the line is not top-notch caliber. Let me ask you very simply. If I said to you, right now you could have Kareem McKenzie in his prime or Marshall Newhouse playing right tackle, who would you take?
Oh, you know I'm going to take K-Mac. That's
okay.
Not even a question.
But I think when the people are being critical, and whether or not they're overly critical about this O-line, and they pick on a guy like Newhouse, what they're basically saying is, okay, McKenzie to me was a Pro Bowl caliber player. I thought he was really, really good, okay?
Yeah.
And the fans are watching, and they're saying, well, guess what? That's not Kareem McKenzie playing right tackle, and they'd like to have him back. So I appreciate when they are suspect or critical of him. That doesn't mean that he doesn't belong in the league. It doesn't mean that he's absolute, not an NFL player. He's an NFL player. And you're right. You're right. The Giants didn't do what they did the last 2 years, well, last year with him, by him being just awful. I mean, heck, you and I, if you've watched a lot of Giants football, I think I could name a bunch of offensive tackles over the course of my years who were a heck of a lot worse than Marshall Newhouse. Okay?
Oh, man.
Okay?
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
I could name a bunch of them. And guys who were like Swiss cheese. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
So he doesn't belong in that category, but he doesn't belong in McKenzie's category either. You know? I guess that I'm just trying to temper you just a little bit in here. Find some place in the middle.
Well, you know what? Because you know who he reminds me of? And Paul, I know you're going to remember this name. He reminds me of a young Doug Riesenberg.
Doug Riesenberg was better. I like Doug.
When he first got here, though,
let me correct myself.
Jumbo.
You said a young Doug Riesenberg. You're right.
Yeah.
Doug Riesenberg needed time, but by the time he got it, he was a solid player.
Oh, he was awesome.
You know, he was a solid player. But, I mean, you know, we've seen guys like Roman Oben play here before, Carl Nelson, Jumbo Elliott, Kareem McKenzie. We've seen some pretty damn good tackles around these parts. Excuse me. And we've also seen some pretty not-so-good tackles around these parts.
Very true. Hey, I didn't want to take up all your time. I just wanted to get that in there. Love you guys. And Lance, what can I say about you, man? You're just an awesome guy. And Paulie, you know,
appreciate
I love
it,
you,
T.
Take care.
Thanks so much for tuning in. And thanks for calling back, T. We appreciate you being a little bit more talkative the second time around.
There you go.
Let's get to Chris in Virginia Beach. Chris, what's happening?
Fellas.
How are you doing, Chris?
Paulie D.
How you doing?
Hey, let me. I know you guys are pressed a little bit, but let me just say this, man. On behalf of the fans with the offensive line talk, and that's not really why I called, but I think it's a glaring need. Everybody knows that that's been, you know, one of the more pressing issues here lately. And I think that, at least in my opinion, I'm slightly offended that we got to get better in the running game and we got to get better in the offensive line. And so guys are like, okay, yeah, all right, that's going to happen. And then the draft goes by. And then the free agency goes by, and not even one guy. We're watching guys, good players, slide to this team and slide to that team, and you know. And so it's like, wait a minute, you keep telling us we're going to do this, but yet you haven't done anything to address the situation,
Chris.
If you want to stay in house, then stay in house.
Chris,
I got to
ask you for a pause button for just a second. You do know though that they had offensive linemen in here, for example, Russell Okung. Was one of the Giants' targets. They brought him in.
Yeah.
They offered him a deal. He decided not to take it, and he left. I mean, so it's not like they've sat on their hands and not tried to get anybody. They did.
Right.
They did try.
And, Chris, before we let you continue, I just want to piggyback off of what Paul said, because I brought up Russell Okung on other programs too. And it's one thing if a player doesn't sign here, Chris, but it's another thing when the team wants that player doesn't necessarily want to do what the team has up their sleeve for him. For example, you want the guy at right tackle, he still wants to play left, but you already have a young left tackle and so forth. And, you know, every team is not going to say, oh, well, we got to appease to one free agent and all of a sudden maneuver everything else that we've been
working
on.
That's a bad idea.
No, of course it's a bad idea.
No,
so I
agree with that 100%.
So that's basically the point that we're basically making is that I think the narrative is, yes, oh, well, they didn't draft anybody. You know, they didn't bring anybody in free agency. There were free agents brought in. The problem is it's a two-way stream. You got to meet each other halfway. And if the player doesn't want to do what the team wants them to do, then really that's up to the player to then choose where they want to sign.
So the two points that need to be made, and we bring Russell's name up again, is because, A, that shows the Giants did at least try to get somebody else in here and upgrade, and B, that's kind of part B, is that, you know what, they wouldn't have gone out and tried to get a guy if they thought that what they had was absolutely perfect and it was okay.
I agree, and I think they understand that, you know, I don't think they want to go into the season. I don't think. I could be wrong, and this is not a knock on Newhouse because, like you guys mentioned earlier, we've seen way worse on either side of the line.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it make sense to let guys know before they come in for, you know, for a workout or whatever? Listen, we need a right tackle. So don't come in here thinking that you're going to play left. We got the left side set. Center to left, we're good.
We don't know exactly what those conversations were and the timing of them.
All
we know is that, you know, they've had visitations. They've had cornerbacks in here too, you know, to try to see if they could upgrade themselves in the secondary. They've had a number of free agents in, and that happens every year. And some of these guys leave the building. And for whatever reason, whether it was contract terms or whether it was scheme or roles, for whatever reason, you know, the guys leave the building, and it's going to happen.
They probably saw all that money flying around with the Giants early in free agency and was like, oh, this kind of money you talking about? I'm gone. See ya.
Well, listen.
I know you can't really talk
about
that. Chris, I think there's a variety of factors. I don't think anything can be confirmed. And I always say some players are steered by the financial component. Some players are steered by the role, how much playing time they're going to get. Some players are steered by my family is in this area. I don't want to get up and leave. You know, every player is entitled to their different perspective that they bring to the table. That's why it's impossible to say, you know, oh, why didn't that player sign? We don't necessarily know the details of the conversation.
Don't discount the fact that sometimes a player will come on a visit. Maybe he's not totally interested in that team, but he's going on the visit just to get interest going somewhere else.
Or you may hear of something that you didn't hear of when they first picked up the phone and happened to bring you in.
So
a lot of things.
Anyway, the point is your original point, and I'm going to let you make one more, Chris, because then we got to go. But the point is, they didn't sit on their hands. We know for a fact they have looked to upgrade the offensive tackle spot, and to this point, it hasn't happened.
And Chris, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Want to squeeze in one more phone call. I know we're running up against the time, but Steve in Brooklyn's been holding. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, fellas? How you doing?
Hi. Well, Steve.
Yes, I called last week. I don't know if you remember. I spoke about Eli.
Okay.
Spoke to you guys on Friday. But I wanted to talk about this running game. Everyone's panicking. It's crazy to me because if I think about last year, the problem was defense. I mean, our O-line wasn't that great, just like you said, but the problem that we had was defense, and in my opinion, we fixed that, at least on paper. So I think we just have to give it time.
Well, Steve, I think it works hand in hand, and I often use the peeling back the levels of the onion or the skin of the onion because it really is a complex situation. You can't totally separate one from the other. Yes,
could
the defense have made stops to help the Giants win a couple more of those games? No question. No one's going to argue that point. But could the offense have potentially milked the clock a couple of times and run the game out so that they weren't in that position? That could have happened too.
But, yeah, but my point is it wasn't as bad as the, basically it wasn't like in the bottom five. I think it was middle of the road.
Well, Steve, I think that if you evaluate the season, it was very up and down. And, Paul, you and I have said this. If you build a chart, the line would be, for those of you watching, up and down.
Seismograph.
Correct. I mean, that's probably the best way to describe it, Steve, in fairness. They had some games they were successful.
Let me ask you guys one question. Because I know you guys got to go. As far as the running game, once the passing game is going to help that also, isn't it?
Go ahead. Yeah, we're here, Steve.
We have Shepard and we have all these weapons. I would think that, you know, that would kind of make it easy on the O-line when it's time to run the ball because you basically can't stack the box.
Well, and that's an interesting point here, too, because the Giants last year were in a position where until Reuben Randall had a couple of great games at the end of the year, for most of the year, because there was no Victor Cruz, Beckham was the one big passing threat. Okay, I know they got some tight end stuff too, but and teams were, without question, teams were cheating. And you're absolutely right. If the Giants' passing game can be more spread out as opposed to concentrated, but more spread out and more versatile, that should open the box up a little bit and enhance their ability to run the ball. So you're absolutely right. And then again, that's another layer of the onion you just peeled back. So good for you.
And Paul, from what you guys been reporting, they've been using every one of these receivers all over the place. So it's not like you're going to be able to assume that one is going to be lining up on this side all the time.
Steve, I can only say to you, if Victor Cruz really can make it back and be added to this equation, it's going to be quite a complex offense, and it's going to be a defensive coordinator's nightmare.
And one last thing. I saw on Twitter, I forgot who posted it on Twitter, but they said they during practice yesterday or the day before, they saw that, I think, four or five receivers was lined up on one side.
They've done a lot of stuff.
Did you guys notice that?
I did not see that particular formation, but I will tell you, I have seen a lot of formations out here on the field, offensively and defensively.
And that's what I'm saying. We got to be excited. We can't be all, you know.
It should be a fun season, Steve.
Well, as you get new personnel, Steve, and
you can
appreciate
do things
the
like
phone
that.
Call, correct.
Yeah.
You can get creative. Yeah. I'm sure Spags is saying to himself, now that I have a few more assets at my disposal, I can now dig deep into my bag of tricks and try to line guys up in spots that I didn't necessarily try last season. Plus, yeah. Remember, a lot of the young guys are learning a new defense for the first time, too. So now they have the basic principles. I think that's a fair point, Steven. Like I said, appreciate
thank
the phone
guys,
call.
Man.
You
thank
got
you.
It. Thanks so
job.
Much for chiming in. You got it. And that is going to wrap things up for us. Really great phone calls, great tweets. Paul and I will certainly try to answer as many questions as possible off the air, so you can continue to send in the tweets to our respective Twitter handles. But we do appreciate the conversation as always, and Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday this week, starting at noon Eastern. We'll be back up and running tomorrow. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good rest of your Tuesday. We'll speak to you on Wednesday, right here on Giants.com.